Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
All right, we're getting comfortable here in the studio, which means that Sue and I have pulled out our blankets that the listeners have sent us, and we're getting rolling here as we take you into the weekend with the Reardon Roundtable. Hello, Jane Duker. How are you?
I am doing awesome. How are you?
I'm doing okay on this Friday. Looking forward to the weekend for sure. I'm heading to the ballpark tonight. I have not. This is so shameful. I've been to one baseball game, although I think a lot of people listening right now have been to zero baseball games this summer. So the crowds have been down, but the Yankees are in town. And one thing that's disappointing is we ordinarily would have been welcoming Paul Goldschmidt back to Busch Stadium, but he has a knee injury, and it looks like he's not even going to play this weekend. But you're going to get to see some of the big guns, and maybe the Cardinals, because they seem to do better against the better teams, can win a series against the Yankees like they did against the Dodgers and against the Cubs. Former state senator John Lamping is with us this afternoon. Hello, John.
Mark, great to see you.
Great to see you, too. And former state senator Jeff Smith as well with us this afternoon. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, buddy. Good to see you again.
Ethan, if you wouldn't mind, do me a favor and help me move that computer just a little bit closer to me because my arm is not that long. Look, let's just start here. Trump and Putin, they walked on the tarmac. They're meeting right now. We actually could have a couple of different scenarios this afternoon. One, this thing lasts about 5 or 10 minutes and Trump comes out and then we're going to go to the news conference, or maybe it takes a little while longer than that. Here is, Brett Baer actually did an interview from Air Force One with Trump, and this is what he said on the way to the summit.
What are your expectations? I mean, is the goal of this meeting in Alaska to walk away with a ceasefire?
So when you talk about deals, it's all I do my whole life. I do deals. You never know. You don't like to have too many expectations. You want it because you have to weave and bob, and you don't know what's going to happen. But we're going to go and find out. I'd like to see a ceasefire. I wouldn't be thrilled if I didn't get it, but everyone says you're not going to get the ceasefire. It'll take place on the second meeting. The second meeting is going to be very, but I'm not going to be happy with that. So we'll see what happens. I'm going to be, I won't be happy if I walk away without some form of a ceasefire. Now, I say this, and I've said it from the beginning, this is really setting the table today. We're going to have another meeting if things work out, which will be very soon, or we're not going to have any more meetings at all, maybe ever.
Yeah, he said that with Brian Kilmeade on Kilmeade's radio show yesterday. I mean, this is kind of setting up further meetings if it goes well. What are Putin's intentions?
I think they're trying to negotiate. He's trying to set a stage. I mean, in his mind, that helps him make a better deal. It actually hurts him, but in his mind, that helps him make a better deal if they can continue the killing.
Obviously, the issue, one of the big issues, is the territorial issues and the swaps that are potentially there.
Are the territorial swaps on the table? Will you be discussing that?
They'll be discussed, but I've got to let Ukraine make that decision. And I think they'll make a proper decision. But I'm not here to negotiate for Ukraine. I'm here to get them at a table. And I think you have two sides. Look, Vladimir Putin wanted to take all of Ukraine. If I wasn't president, he would right now be taking all of Ukraine, but he's not going to do it.
So the demands from Ukraine, they want a durable ceasefire before territory talks, security guarantees. They want Russia to pay for damages caused by the war. They want the return of children and POWs, and they want Trump to keep sanctions on Russia, if not increase sanctions. Russia wants Ukraine to cede the occupied territory. Ukraine must abandon NATO aspirations. They have to demilitarize. Resolution must address the root causes. And then, of course, regime change. It seems like they would be kind of far apart. I don't know that anyone in this room is a foreign foreign policy expert, but I don't know that anyone also realistically, just knowing the players here and knowing the, you know, the fact that this thing is not moved in a direction to be solved anywhere in the past couple of years. So, Jane, I don't know what the reality is here, but Trump could get, you know, maybe get things moving in the right direction. I do think we're going to know relatively quickly. I mean, if he walks out of this meeting, he's not one to just kind of keep his mouth shut. So he's going to tell us how it went and where it might go next.
I mean, it sounds like, you know, look, both sides have unrealistic demands. So, okay. But that is where you, like, start the negotiating. And, I mean, everybody has unrealistic demands when they're, you know, trying to press for their side. So, I mean, that is not uncommon. I don't think this is something that's, like, you know, unheard of in the whole, you know, foreign relations, you know, space. So, I think they, you know, they start talking about what's realistic here. And I do think a mediator, I'm not sure if Trump's the guy, but a mediator telling both of them that this is what's unreasonable here. And, you know, I think this is how it always starts. Everybody has their demands. Then you sit down and you start saying, OK, what are you going to get? It's going to take time on task.
But both sides don't seem to be flexible on.
Well, they don't
any
have
the
any incentive.
Yeah.
But the United States can provide incentive. You know what I mean? They can put their finger on the scale and say, you know what? We have the ability to issue sanctions. We have the ability to, like, you know, help Ukraine, or we have the ability to tell Ukraine that this is an unreasonable demand. I mean, if we're going to join in this little dance, we're going to have to be prepared to put something in the game to change the scales so that both of them have to come to the table. Right now, they have no incentive to go to the table. So we're going to help them get that. I mean, that's what leadership is.
Well, it'd be interesting to be in that room. There's no doubt, John, between these two guys, you know, the biggest leaders on the planet.
Well, it's an historic moment. And I think I feel the same way most of the free world feels, that they pray that this comes to a ceasefire first and then the end of this war. You know, there's 1.5 to 2 million people's lives have been lost or, you know, affected, casualties. This war was going nowhere. The two sides were very close to a stalemate. And, you know, I think if he can pull this off, or if he can at least get them to the table and have somebody else step in and do it, it's nothing short of an historic moment in time. And I pray that he's successful.
Jeff Smith. Obviously, you know, I don't see Democrats necessarily rooting. We're going to talk about some issues where Democrats are rooting against Trump. I don't see Democrats really rooting against him in this moment.
I think the country is rooting for him. I think pretty much everybody in the country is just saddened at the thousands of lives that have been lost over there, and just the number of children that have to grow up in that atmosphere where they're awakened by bomb sirens.
It's horrible.
Night after night after night.
To think in this era, right?
Yeah, I mean, nobody wants that, and I think, you know, I don't care who gets the credit for it. I'm glad that both sides are talking. As John said, you know, we're at something of a stalemate, and the battle lines haven't really shifted at all the last couple of years. So it's, you know, one country gets a little bit of an edge for a few weeks, and then the other country kind of pushes back. And, you know, I'm not seeing a natural end to this. And so hopefully just getting them at the table talking. I know that Putin has wanted this one-on-one meeting for a long time, and maybe he will feel validated, you know, that he gets it on American soil, and maybe he'll move a little bit. So I'm excited to see what comes out of this. And certainly I think Democrats and Republicans, if there's one rare thing that unites us in this country right now, it is rooting for a ceasefire and a solution to this.
And I think that's true, although a lot of people, if you go back to this particular administration, everyone thought that Trump was, you know, even coming out of that hot meeting with Zelensky at the White House that one day, that Trump somehow is buddy-buddy with Putin. I think, look, I take him at his word that he wants to stop the killing. He wants to stop this because it's insane. And then Israel and Gaza, that's a whole other picture. But to me, to be in this conflict for this long and so many lives being lost. And then there's, you know, it's a little hard to gauge what the impact is on Russia, because I think the impact is more severe.
And they hide it.
That, right. Well, because there's economic impact, right?
Yes.
They're losing a lot of young men. I think the support from inside is questionable. We don't have an accurate picture. I was telling Sue that the other day. It'd be awesome to be there in Russia and just to see what the coverage is like and what the people, you know, in Russia feel about this, because I don't think they're able to express themselves the same way certainly we are in this country via social media or otherwise.
I think certainly the Russians want intermediate and longer term lasting peace. And I think it's to watch the behavior of NATO since the fall of the Great Wall and the expansion of NATO And I think that all along, Putin was pretty clear in the last 15 or 20 years that this was ultimately untenable. You couldn't have NATO expand the way it did. I think that if at the end of the day that they negotiate a peace and there's a ceasefire, but there's nothing different about how NATO operates and who is and who isn't in NATO, I don't think it'll be necessarily perceived as an intermediate, long-term, lasting solution. But nonetheless, this is an extraordinary time. In our history, we have very few moments in time where we sit down major powers to negotiate peace, and we hope that this is the beginning. The end of the whole thing.
Seems like the 80s all over again.
Well, and it seems like both sides are getting their asses handed to them. I mean, I think that's why this is a little bit harder than, you know, Gaza and Israel. I mean, that, you know, Hamas needs to be eradicated. That's going to be very challenging. That's a whole different dynamic, in my opinion. This is a dumb war that neither side is winning, and there is no end in sight. So somebody needs to be able to sit down with them and say, you both are ruining yourselves. This is dumb. Don't do this. You know, there's going to have to be a mediator there, because right now it's just ego, in my opinion.
Hang tight. We have a lot of stuff to talk about in this country, including rewriting congressional district lines in Texas, California, and here in Missouri. We have former state senators John Lamping and Jeff Smith on our roundtable panel, Jane Duker as well. We're coming back with more.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense, while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
More here in Roundtable for a Friday. We have former state senators Jeff Smith and John Lamping on the panel. Jane is here as well. She's going to hang out for the 4 o'clock hour. It looks like, I think the latest information on the Democrats that fled Texas is they're going to come back on Monday. The gerrymandering is going to occur. They're going to rewrite these, you know, congressional lines. And then here in Missouri, we have our own battle brewing over that. That is, I think, in both situations being pushed forward by President Trump. Jeff Smith, I'm going to start with you on this one. And I've admitted the last week or so that I have some conflicting thoughts about the redrawing of lines, especially here in Missouri, where we just did this a couple of years ago. But then I look at the maps from Illinois and California and some of these other states. They all do it, no matter who's in control, right? I don't think you can deny that. So Texas is a little bit of a different situation, obviously, because of the narrow majority that Republicans have in the House. President Trump is interested in making sure that maybe there's less risk for the midterm elections in 2026. There were people in the Freedom Caucus and beyond here in Missouri that wanted the drawn lines to be more of a 7-1 favoring Republicans. That did not happen in the end. They're trying to do it again. And Mike Kehoe, the governor, is going to call a special session in all likelihood to do this, right?
Yeah, I think he is. I want to just address the kind of conflation of two different things that I hear a lot, and I just heard it, which is, yes, other states gerrymander. Blue states, red states, they all gerrymander. But what's happening here and what makes what's happening right now different around the country is that it's happening in the middle of the decade.
Right.
Which it's extraordinary.
Well, not even in the middle. Yeah, I guess it is the middle of the decade.
You know, yeah.
I'm not good at math.
what was always done, you know, for centuries was to wait for the decennial census, and then the lines are redrawn after the census, and they last for 10 years. And that gives some sense of stability and continuity for voters and who their representatives are. To just willy-nilly do it in the middle of the decade, it started with Tom DeLay when he was the House Majority Leader from Texas, and he had them do it in 2003, basically because they could, because they had the power. And that's kind of what's happening now. And Texas, you know, Trump basically, I think it's rooted in the fact that he wants to keep a majority of the U.S. House. He doesn't want to be investigated, certainly doesn't want to be impeached again. And he has said if there are red states, you know, like Texas, that are in control of everything and we could pick up several seats, maybe as many as 5 in Texas, go and redraw the lines in the middle of the decade. I don't care about tradition. Just do it. And unfortunately, Missouri is going to be caught up in that because there's one district in Kansas City that is a Democratic district now that could be redrawn to be a Republican-leaning district. And that's probably what's going to happen. California, led by Gavin Newsom, is going to, they're going to retaliate, you know, and say, hey, if we're not going to do this first, But if you do it, we're not going to let you just keep punching us in the face and turning the other cheek. We're going to hit back and redistrict and probably get as many Democratic districts created
yep.
as you take from us. So, you know, I think it's actually unified Democrats around the country who are saying we're not out there. We believe in nonpartisan redistricting processes and we're not for gerrymandering, but we're not going to keep getting walked on.
John.
Well, the Democrats are very much for gerrymandering. It sounds like, according to Jeff, they just want to do it every 10 years and not every two or three. The state of Massachusetts is a bigger state than ours, higher population than ours. And I think it's been, what, 30 years since they've had even one Republican congressman? So it's we point to
Peter Tordrickson, I think, in the mid-90s.
Yeah, so it's a 9-0.
Oh, look at that. He even knew the name.
So it's a
9-0.
That's
impressive.
Trump's smart. Trump recognizes what's the law, what are the rules. There's no law. The rule is tradition. And with the majority in Congress comes tremendous power, not least of which is the Democrats have already said that they will intend to impeach him the minute that they have the majority in the House, regardless of whether or not he can be found guilty. So this is classic Trump. He understands the rules of the game. He understands where the line can be crossed, and he's crossing the line. I'm really intrigued about our state. And what Jeff just suggested is that if Texas picks up 5, I think California has a hard time picking up more than 5 D's the way it's gerrymandered now. So maybe, who knows, maybe it's Missouri is where the majority lies. And the way that I know Mike really well, Mike Kehoe, and Mike is a deal maker, and he's not an ideologue. He's not comfortable in this type of partisanship. Like he would never want to have the map be 8-0 here. And if you think about it now, we're 6-2, so it's 75% Republican, 25% Democrat. And Mike can live with that because that's kind of, even though the state's 40% Democrat, it's concentrated in the urban areas. So,
When you're getting a call from Trump, that changes the...
Yeah,
dynamics, doesn't it?
But it serves a good purpose for him. So Mike, the criticism of Mike is that he's not partisan, that he's not red meat, he's not mega, any of those things, and he's not. And if it were up to him, he would never change what is. I mean, he was lieutenant governor when they were redrawing the districts, and he didn't weigh in to go for the 7-1 map. He was so I think it's a gift to him. I think that if he sees this through. Trump will support him, and Jeff could think it's. I mean, I'm talking about his reelection, and I think Mike's reelection and not be challenged in a primary. I think a lot. I think if he delivers this and is perceived as a huge victory for Trump, I think it'll keep Mike's reelection primary free.
So I'll just say, 1 month ago today, there are 111, I think, Republicans in the Missouri House. And I think probably 100 of them did not want to do this. There were maybe a dozen that did. And that changed very quickly once the White House got involved,
yeah.
as John mm-hmm. said.
That's where it's coming from.
Yeah. But what the reason that a lot of them didn't want to do it is because they have things, they have priorities, they have bills they file, and they want to pass them. They want conservative policy wins. And they know that Democratic state senators are going to retaliate by filibustering basically every bill next session if they do this extraordinary thing and basically steal this House seat in the middle of the decade, that their stuff is going to die on the vine next session. And so that's, I think, the reason that initially most Republicans in the legislature weren't excited about doing this and were quoted as saying that in the first couple of days until President Trump made that phone call.
If I wasn't excited for a 7-1 nap, what Jeff just describes makes me beyond excited and thrilled. What's coming out of Jefferson City in this first year of Kehoe as governor has been god-awful and horrible, not least of which is Senate Bill 4, which saw all of our utility rates skyrocket, and it hasn't even gone to effect yet. So if what Jeff's saying is right, if nothing passes in Jeff City as a result of the 7-1 map, that's bonus. It's bonus.
Jane?
I mean, here's the thing. This is just more escalating. I mean, so this will happen when the Democrats do it, and then there will just be complete chaos. You know, every time a president is worried about getting a bad midterm, we're going to do this game. And I mean, this has nothing to do with helping anything. It really doesn't. It's just naked power grabbing because he just doesn't want to look bad at midterms. And that's not policy. That's just naked power grabbing, and it has nothing to do with democracy.
Well, but you can't get policy. You can't get effective policy. Look, there's a chance that Congress flips and you don't have the trifecta. In fact, history would dictate that it might, certainly in the House with the narrow majority. So in order to get things done and not be a lame duck president after 2 years, this is part of the goal. I'll admit I'm uncomfortable with it because I don't like the timing very much. But then when I look at Illinois and I look at, you know, J.B. Pritzker going on Colbert and trying to make the case that, you know, this is heroic for these Democrats in Texas to come to his sanctuary state. When you look at the map there, even at Kristen Welker on Meet the Press, I'll give some credit to the legacy media last week, kind of calling him out on that. So where I kind of come down is, look, this is, you guys know this. Politics is a blood sport.
Yep.
It gets dirty and nasty in the sandbox. That's what they're doing right now.
Well, and guess, I mean, and yeah, and there will be retaliation. And so, I mean, that just means, I agree. I mean, if people don't want stuff done, this is a great way to do it because, I mean, certainly people are going to say, well, of course the Democrats are going to stand up on this. They're not going to sit down for this, and they shouldn't.
But the courts also have to get involved here, right? This would, if this is redrawn by the legislature, don't they have to approve it, though?
No, he'll be able to do it.
No. I mean, there's no law that prevents them from doing this. There's no Missouri law. There's nothing. There was nothing that says that this has to be triggered by, you have to do one at the census.
At the census, right.
Now, there is an important distinction here. There is a place where the courts may get involved, and that's more broadly the Supreme Court has indicated that they may take another look at the Voting Rights Act.
Absolutely.
And if they take a look, if they do that,
if they take a look at the Voting Rights Act,
all bets
are
off.
They're going to gut it.
Yeah, all bets are off.
That's what I think is going to happen. And I think then they'll gut it.
And if that happens, we could see 20 states redistrict.
Yeah, and that probably will happen. But
it probably
will. Jane mentioned before, you know, this is how you do good policy. Washington, D.C. is, it's not about policy anymore. It's just pure power. They haven't passed an actual budget since the late 90s. It's all executive orders and appointments. It's not about policy, sadly. And to look at
governing by press release.
When you look at Massachusetts, I mentioned this because I have a whole bunch of friends in Massachusetts. They're all very conservative people, and they haven't had a congressman in the whole state for 30 years. And dead silence from amongst Democrats, you know, like that's fine. I mean, it's one thing. Illinois is 82-18.
You would have to gerrymander the crap out of Massachusetts
to
create a Republican district because there's no part of Massachusetts that's overwhelmingly Republican. So you would actually have to gerrymander. I've looked at Massachusetts pretty closely, and you would have to draw a crazy looking district to create
like the one that they drew in Illinois. You got crazy looking districts out there.
I agree with you. It'd be quite the salamander, which is the roots of gerrymandering.
Exactly.
And but nonetheless, there's dead silence. And look, the Voting Rights Act is probably going to get thrown out. With that, for your listeners, that's that you have to have a certain.
They're going to gut it. They're not going to come back and say we're going to protect Emanuel Cleaver.
When you draw districts, you have to have a certain amount of minority representation.
And if you look at race at all, that's illegal. That's what they're going to say.
And that's how we're going to get Missouri.
Working toward it.
That's how we get Missouri to 8-0.
Yes.
All right, hang tight. It's the Reardon Roundtable on a Friday. John Lamping, Jeff Smith, Jane Duker. We're coming back.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
The Reardon Roundtable on a Friday afternoon. Jane Duker hanging out with us here in the studio. Former state senators John Lamping and Jeff Smith. The president went into Washington, D.C. and had the National Guard make a presence. They've been trying to, you know, make some arrests here the past few nights. This is a limited engagement for 30 days. Could be extended. Why are Democrats, Jane, so opposed to reducing crime? Why do you love criminals so much?
You're talking to the wrong Democrat.
I know, that's probably true.
Sorry, but you're talking to the wrong Democrat because I'm like, okay, when will we get some help in St. Louis? It's a good issue for Republicans. I mean, that's the bottom. I don't care what party
the polling
you are.
Really does show
the
that.
The polling shows.
Harry Enten's been on CNN saying, look, guys, you guys don't realize how important this is.
I mean,
even Democrats have had to be a little vocal in the past few days.
They want to not die.
Right.
Okay, people don't want to be shot. Like, Prop P passed in every, Prop P to fund police in the city passed every North Side ward. Every single one. So, I mean, the progressives, the radical progressives, again, are drawing a line that's going to hurt Democrats. It just is. And so every time they say we're going to fight against, you know, tamping down crime, it further dilutes their power as a political party. I don't know when we became the party of crime, but we seem to be liking criminals more than we like everybody else.
It's going to be interesting to watch to what extent this is successful and can be measured as successful. And it becomes kind of the test case for the next 5 or 10 cities around the country who might be interested in a similar type of policing action.
Oh, I mean, we need to clean up here. I mean, it's not even.
But I mean,
a close
I think
call.
That I think that's a possibility.
Well, what I find I think is a very good, you know, indicator is when you have the city of St. Louis throw out to Tashara Jones in large part because of crime and her defund the police. I mean, that right there is an indicator what people think is working and isn't working. And I think people, you know, they're smarter than you think. Mm-hmm. And they realize, and I think that it's going to hurt Megan Green. I think Megan Green is very vulnerable if you have a good candidate because of her defund the police.
Well, maybe
stance.
By the time it gets to St. Louis, they'll embrace it.
I'm hoping. I don't have a lot of faith.
I don't think people in St. Louis City are going to embrace Donald Trump's, you know,
not today, masked
ICE agents coming in, you know, without uniforms and, you know, snatching people. Look, I think you guys have a good point, which is that people generally support the cops. And one thing I learned, you know, in a district,
they didn't always trust me.
In a district that I represented, that was about 60% black and about 35% white, is that the two things that most people wanted were the exact same in Walnut Park in Northwest St. Louis and in St. Louis Hills in Southwest St. Louis. Two neighborhoods that didn't look a lot like each other, and one was almost all black and one was almost all white, and they both wanted more cops on their street and mm-hmm. better schools. Same two things.
And housing.
But,
those are the three.
But they did not. They will not be clamoring for Donald Trump's, you know, agents to be who aren't from these neighborhoods, don't know these neighborhoods, don't have any experience to come into other cities. I don't think it accomplished anything in Los Angeles, and I don't think it will accomplish anything if he does this all over the country, except as a political stunt to distract from things that he wants people not to pay attention
to,
like the Epstein files.
Okay, let's. I'm so glad you brought that up, because, John, respond to the whole Epstein file thing. First of all, I don't give a rip, and I think a lot of people don't give a rip. I mean, I think we've known that there was a relationship there. He knew Epstein. He was there. But what that's their go-to line. The talking point here is that everything Trump's doing is just to distract from those headlines, the Epstein files.
Well, he's got to get his butt out of that problem.
Well, that's the line. With respect to the crime program in D.C., if it's successful and other cities embrace it, I think that eventually St. Louis will come around, because if it works, it works, right? But no, there's certain things that Trump says that bother me and bother lots of other people that share similar political views. And one is the Epstein file. The Epstein file should be litigated, as far as I'm concerned. I think there's tremendous, some evil things have gone on around Epstein. I think that
Diddy, that all needs to come out too.
And I think the vaccine, which we know for sure now, was just a gene therapy experiment that has caused tremendous damage, and it's leaking out bit by bit. We're understanding now that the COVID vaccine caused more harm than it did good. And Trump can't help himself to talk about, you know, warp speed and how it came to, and those are the two things that are like third rail for him amongst us, amongst the Republican, the hard right Republicans.
In other words, on the warp speed, he's not backing down from the claims
about it.
To
every
success.
Every time we talk about it, we all shake our head.
Right.
You know, but we'll take that with all the other stuff, you know. And he doesn't have to run for re-election, probably not. And I think it's just not working. I mean, if you solve for crime in D.C., and the next city raises their hand and says, come help us out, and you solve crime there, it's not going to be, oh, but this is just to hide Epstein. Like, it's not going to work.
But is there, you know,
well, that's the problem, because they don't have this is why I think it fails, is they don't, you can crab about the federal, you know, feds coming in, but you don't have a plan. Okay, so when are you going to step up and hire the 200 or 300 officers that we need to hire? Okay, I mean, that's where I think that this definitely becomes a problem for Democrats, because you can complain about Trump coming in, but you had no plan. You've done absolutely nothing has been done by the city of St. Louis to lower crime. That's just reality. And you close the workhouse. Now we have more budget money going to ankle bracelets. We're going to have another Janae Edmondson before you can even say anything, because everybody's going to have to go on an ankle bracelet because they shut down the workhouse and the downtown jail is a fourth world horrible constitutional violation standing. So, I mean, this, we have not got the criminal justice. We have children carjackers getting out and carjacking within 24 hours.
Day, right. Now, okay. A lot of this is crossover to what they're dealing with in D.C. really is. I mean, I've heard so many stories. I had a guest yesterday.
We have to redo the point system, okay? I mean,
I talked to Tim Fitch about that yesterday.
If you're a juvenile and you commit a crime with a gun, you are not going home to your parents.
Yeah, the seven deadly sins.
That's it. Yep. The prosecutor in St. Louis County has no trouble saying that. You commit a crime with a gun, you're going to jail. It's a real easy rule, and the criminals will eventually get it if you actually enforce that. But we don't have the ability to enforce that in the city of St. Louis because we don't have a place to put these people. Now, nobody complained when the feds came in and started prosecuting, you know, to take care of Kim Gardner's problem. And, you know, that wasn't looking as it looked like a takeover. I mean, the bottom line is either you're going to fix crime or you're not. Decide.
I was a little confused, too, when I was talking to Chief Fitz, who was on the roundtable a week ago. But on the point system, who has to change it? It's not the legislature.
Court.
It's this group that sort of oversees it,
yes,
right?
Mm-hmm. The court. Now, that doesn't mean I don't think that you can say that the legislature has no role. And if the courts don't do it, I guarantee you that someone is going to try something. And, you know, we went through this whole thing where we've decided the criminals were more important than society. And so these kids, I mean, we're just getting cases of it. I mean, that carjacking is explained exactly what the problem is. We have a juvenile crime crisis in this city, and there is nothing changing.
No, it's not. And I'm disappointed, too, by the fact that the legislature does. People need to understand the way the legislature looks at the map is they look at like west of Missouri River in St. Charles County and then all the way to Jackson County. That's, and then up and down in north and south. The Republicans in the control. They just want to placate whatever's going on in the city and the county. As long as you like don't complain too loud, or maybe it's a campaign issue like the police plan. Mm-hmm. But they really don't want to get their fingers dirty at all. They don't want to roll up their sleeves.
Because they don't want to take care of the cities
But it's interesting, though. Think about this. If Trump nationalizes this D.C. program and comes and offers it to other cities, and I think he most certainly will, I mean, he's doing what the Republicans in Missouri should be doing. Same thing with the 7-1 map. If you leave it to the Republicans in Missouri, it's a 6-2 map. Leave it to the Republicans in Missouri, nothing's solved for in the cities. And here's Trump saying, no, 7-1 map. No, we can't let cities continue to deteriorate. I mean, this guy's president for lots of different people, not least of which is the poor inner city D.C. African-American community.
Well, right. If you look at the polling was really stunning from D.C. Yeah. I mean, if you combine the people who are, and a lot of this came from African-American support and African-American women in particular, combine the number of people who are concerned or seriously concerned about crime, it's like 91%, which is, that's a pretty unheard of number.
You go to any urban area and you're going to get the same statistics. You are. And so,
and you go to a lot of rural areas, and you're going to get similar statistics because crime rose a lot for many years in the 2010s in rural areas as well.
It has.
And you see a lot of.
It's mostly drug crime though. It's not street crime. It's not your tourists getting.
It's not
run
random
over.
Crime.
It's not random
right.
crime.
Right. We still have a random crime problem.
Who knows? Maybe we need to get Megan Green Trump's phone number. What do you think?
Oh, I mean, she has to go. I mean, if we have any hope of changing any in the city, Megan has to go.
I want to lift up a comment from one of your commenters.
Okay, sure. That's on the YouTube or the Twitter feed?
One of the most ridiculous and asinine things I've ever heard in my life.
I didn't even know you had access to that stream.
No, it's fine. I can see it right here.
Okay, what does it say?
Leftists so low when bringing up Epstein, it'll catch more Dems than it will Republicans. Number one, we're not the ones who spent the entire 2024 bringing up Epstein. It was the right. It wasn't us, okay?
That
so I want to start with that.
Right.
By the way, I'm the outlier on that. I don't, you know what? I think whatever he did and whatever he's guilty of, and obviously he's not on the planet anymore.
I think children were harmed.
There's no doubt. There's no doubt about that. So, I'm talking about the focus on the files and whatever is going to be related to
right.
Trump.
Well,
I think there's a hyper focus on that.
Kids.
But go ahead.
Well, and that's the second part is just this assumption, you know, like, well, it's going to catch more Dems. I don't give a shit who it catches.
They should
I want
all
it
go
to catch
jail.
Anybody right. yeah. who harmed a child should go and pay the price for that.
Well, Taibbi in Rolling Stone magazine in 2003 wrote an article about the Lolita Express featuring Bill Clinton and his 23 different trips on the plane. So it's a lot of very powerful people that will go down.
And anybody of either party that engaged in that should pay the price.
They are Amen. Stuck with what they
did. You mean like the Catholic priest did?
Exactly.
No, I was being sarcastic because they just got shuffled around to a different archdiocese.
You know what? Well, I was going to say the archdiocese is as secret as the federal government. There,
you might be right about that.
So, I mean, is that what you want?
Hang tight. One more segment of the roundtable coming up. All right, it's Rear Roundtable on a Friday. Jeff Smith, John Lamping, Jane Duker, all on the panel. I did not have this one on the original list, but I think we can all relate to this. So there's been this, I guess they've taken a look and they've done an audit of the U.S. Postal Service here in St. Louis. Sam Graves, who represents one of the districts toward the other side of the state, I think it's the 6th District of Missouri, says, I've been saying that the St. Louis Processing and Delivery Center was a black hole and mail went there to die, but it turns out that was an understatement. Following repeated calls for an investigation into the mail issues there from me and my colleagues in Missouri and Illinois, the USPS office and the Inspector General released their findings from the audit they conducted over the last 3 months. In just 2 days in June, almost 2.6 million pieces of mail were delayed. If that wasn't bad enough, they only reported about 1.5 million pieces as delayed. They weren't even reporting the missed mail correctly. On top of that, over 50% of all outbound mail trips from the St. Louis processing facility from May 24 to April 25 were late or canceled. Local carriers can't deliver the mail if it doesn't get to them. That's completely unacceptable. Those of us in the room have all had issues. I've had issues with the USPS. I don't know what the, something needs to change. First of all, I don't think we need mail delivery 6 days a week, personally. I think we could limit it to a few days a week. Some people might not like that. But look, this thing is a black hole. And this audit that, came down, and I don't know how many of you looked into this, it's just a disaster. And that's hemorrhaging taxpayer money and trust. People don't, trust it. We've had a couple of situations. I had a package I sent from here that was supposed to be in Minneapolis. It took 5 weeks for it to get there. It was stuck. We knew exactly where it was up in Florissant, but they had so much of a backup. And I think there was some sort of contamination at that time they were trying to clean up as well. But what are the answers to clear up the United States Postal Service? Anyone got any ideas there?
I mean, it needs a complete management rehaul. I mean, I agree. Like, they're having the same debate in the city over the recycling. The recycling is not working, okay? It's just not. And it's causing taxpayers.
Well, by the way, that's a good move by Kara Spencer today.
It was a good move. Yeah. But then you heard I just take 5 minutes to go listen to the hearing yesterday at the Board of Aldermen when the nonprofit environmental industrial complex came to the hearing and was like, this is a basic service of life and you have to do this and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, wait, okay, I have an idea. Why don't these nonprofits provide the service then? Because taxpayers are getting ripped off and we need to stop ripping them off. And they have no ideas on how you're going to get people to properly not contaminate the recycling before.
Just to be clear, I want to make sure people are aware of this. Like, Sue still lives in the city. When I lived in the city, you have in your alleys, you have the trash dumpster and the recycling.
That's going away.
Basically, they said, I think so the curbside recycling is still going to stay in place if you live in an area that has that. But the dirty little secret, literally, is that the stuff that you're putting in there really isn't being recycled anyway. It's just a complete waste of money.
That's true.
You feel good about it.
Yeah, well, that's all it was.
It's all virtue signaling.
It is.
And here's the problem. They pay 5 times more for the recycled stuff. And so...
Well, I think they're going to hire the right lobbyists to get that contract back. You're making 5 times the money.
It's insane. And so, I agree with the mayor that then we're not doing this anymore because this is hurting taxpayers. We're not getting the benefit of the program, and we ought not be doing programs that don't work.
I give her credit.
And cause the loss of taxpayer dollars. But just listen to this hearing. I mean, this is everything that's wrong with the city is these fools coming up and saying this is like a fundamental right. Like, not living is not a fundamental right. Recycling is the most fundamental service in the city of St.
Louis. The post office thing, it's a big deal. I mean, the country's embraced mail and voting, for one, so that needs to be solved for. And if you go across the rural communities, they're not worried about their NPR and PBS, that funding getting cut. Rural communities don't need that, but they do like and appreciate the post offices. And so it's not like this is going to go away anytime soon. And I think Sam Graves actually is the chair of the Commerce Committee, so I'm assuming this kind of falls under Sam, right?
Yeah.
So hopefully it gets some attention that it
I mean,
so
I know that
needs.
Rural people like their post offices, yeah. but it's not providing the service. It really isn't. I mean, I agree with you. There has to be fundamental change.
Well, again,
change.
It's not the carriers. We're not criticizing the carriers out there because it's not their fault. Jeff?
Yeah, a few things quickly. Number one, like Newt Gingrich had a very brilliant insight in the mid-1990s, and he went after government. He was ruthless about just kind of lambasting government because he realized that if people's trust in government is eroded for any reason, then it was going to help the Republican Party by tagging the Democrats as the party of government, right? So it's incumbent upon Democrats, if we want to be a party that believes that government can be a constructive force in people's lives, we have to run it well. And one of the things I wrote in the wake of the 2024 election was that if Democrats in Missouri want to ever come close to getting a majority again, then we have to make the two best governed places in Missouri, St. Louis and Kansas City, so that Missouri Republicans can no longer point to dysfunction like a Kim Gardner or like the current sheriff as indicative of blue state, blue city governance. We have to do it really well.
Ding, ding, ding. Ring the bell.
Ring the bell.
There you go. And you've got this new mayor coming into New York. We won't be able to leverage that at all for any kind of votes.
Yeah, I'm so happy about that because I'm still disappointed we lost Cori Bush because she was the gift that kept on giving.
No, but don't worry, Donnie's she might come back.
You know, and Jeff, I have to get your opinion because this is great, and we don't have time really to get into the big broad brush of national politics. And you know, J.B. Pritzker already kind of carving out his lane, and whoever else is going to run. But the Democrat Socialists of America had a conference in Chicago last week, and they sent a pretty strong message. I had Jessica Kotescu on the show from the Free Beacon who attended the conference. And the message was that, you know, this is what we want. That Mamdani's surprise win is not an anomaly. This is what Democrats want in the Democrat Party, to have, you know, a focus on some of the freebies and, you know, the nonsense that he's about. But this is my favorite part. To go to this conference, it required a ticket of $225, party membership, and then attendees were also required to submit proof of a negative COVID test prior to arrival. That was last week. I had to look at the date. I thought I was looking at something that was in August of 2021. No. It was August of 2025.
Did they all wear
masks? You guys are still requiring. They probably did. Come on, Jeff Smith. That's another gift that keeps on giving.
Look, I was on oxygen, you know.
No, I know you had it pretty bad for the first strain.
Yeah, and I don't walk around, you know, eschewing any place where people aren't tested or I don't, you know, walk around in a mask, but you know, as somebody who was hospitalized and on oxygen for it, you know, I get why you know, some people would feel that way, but I think we've moved on, and where we are is, if you're somebody who's immunocompromised or you're somebody who feels in danger, then you probably shouldn't be at a huge conference like that. So
there you go. Jeff Smith, thanks for coming in on this Friday. Great to see you. John Lamping, awesome to visit with you as well. Jane, you're going to hang out in the next hour.
Yes.
All right, we'll have a little fun with Paul Hall on entertainment and also with Cusumano on sports. It's all coming up.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense, while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.